Flour, cornmeal, baking soda, butter, eggs, buttermilk.
Says spittle on the griddle as you drop that batter into that hot butter. Round and brown, piping hot, like as not, what we got is hotcakes. Hubba, 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 puffing up fluffy and sweet. Now wait, and now flip it.
That was Carly Simon. I'm Celeste Quinn. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our topic this afternoon, hotcakes and more. We'll talk about a meal that's good no matter the time of day, breakfast. Our guests, award-winning cookbook authors Cheryl Alters Jamieson and Bill Jamieson. They are respected authorities on American regional cooking and the authors of 14 cookbooks and travel guides. They've received many honors for their work, including James Beard Awards for Smoke and Spice and the Border Cookbook, which also received a Julia Child nomination. Their book, American Home Cooking, was awarded both prizes in the year 2000. Their new book is A Real American Breakfast, and breakfast is what we'll talk about here this afternoon. Listeners, I invite your questions and comments. You can request a recipe, share a favorite recipe. Maybe you have a story about breakfast you'd like to share. Here are the telephone numbers in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's 333-WYLL. Anywhere else, call toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Cheryl, Bill, good afternoon. Welcome.
Hi, Celeste.
Hello.
Hi. Thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Oh, our pleasure.
We're always happy to talk about breakfast any time of the day.
Me too. Boy, I just want to go home and make breakfast. We started off with Carly Simon's doing a little number called Hotcakes.
Yeah, that was fun.
And hotcakes, pancakes, griddle cakes, hoe cakes. Is there a difference between these things, or is it just a matter of regional identifiers?
There's some differences, particularly if you're talking about an authentic hoe cake, for example, which is just an unleavened kind of corn cake. But generally, we just have a lot of great terms for pancakes.
Kind of shows Americans' love for that type of dish, I think, that wide variety of names, from flapjacks to flannel
cakes to hotcakes,
et cetera.
They're going like hotcakes, aren't they? The two of you, I know, are very interested in regional food differences. When it comes to breakfast, is there a lot of variation from one part of the country to another?
We think that surprisingly there is a good bit of difference. You know, today our country has become awfully homogenized in many respects, so we can find the same stores in our malls in every city and the same chain restaurants in most of them too. But we were really intrigued by the notion that we did see real regional differences in what people eat for breakfast. They're the homey foods, the comforting foods. They're foods that have taste, that bring back memories of previous generations. And those often do have regional differences from, say, Joe's Special, a wonderful scramble from San Francisco, to, say, shrimp and grits from the Carolina Low Country.
Mm. Or red flannel hash from New England. Mm. Or migas from Texas.
Now, what's a miga?
It's a scrambled dish that has corn chips in it, as well as chili salsa.
Ooh, it's a real favorite of ours.
Very Tex-Mex. Well, I also know that shrimp and grits are a big favorite of yours, too.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. And that's a wonderful dish. It sounds sort of surprising and maybe even off-putting to people who haven't tried it, but actually it's a wonderful combination of ingredients. You get the silky smooth, the texture of the good grits, and then this really delightfully scented and tasting gravy with the shrimp added into it, but lots of bacon and bell pepper kind of back notes to the flavor of the sauce.
Boy, that is such a Whoever came up with that first, what a great idea.
It's inspired. It really is. We sure can't take credit for it. I mean, it's a very traditional, old-style dish that's been around for generations. But, boy, we are sure happy that we discovered it at some point.
Yeah. Boy, can't you imagine sitting like somewhere in Charleston, South Carolina, on a beautiful spring morning and enjoying that late morning?
Yeah.
You know, about this time of year, maybe a little later next month. Gee. Okay, we mentioned also, somebody mentioned Joe's, a special called Joe's Eggs that comes from San Francisco, and that's really hearty fare. That's something a 49er could have had for breakfast.
That's right. Has a combination of ground beef and spinach and eggs and, a lot of other things, too, onion, garlic, whatever the cook in the kitchen decides. But the basics are the spinach and the ground beef and the eggs, and what a meal it is.
Boy, you're ready for the whole day. Have that under your belt.
May not need to eat again the whole day.
Yeah. Now, you guys are living in Santa Fe these days.
Right.
That's right.
What do the locals like to eat there for breakfast?
Well, there are a number of things that are real specialties of this area. There is an omelet that's locally called simply a Santa Fe omelet, which has cheese and lots of green chili.
Mm.
There are breakfast burritos, which sometimes have eggs, but other times just have potatoes and bacon or sausage.
Again, with chili sauce.
Right. Everything with chili sauce.
And it can be Christmas, too, any time of the year.
Right.
That means you want red and green chili sauce.
Right.
You got the insider language there. That's right.
Well, let's go back to hotcakes and pancakes and the like. You have lots of recipes in the book, A Real American Breakfast, for pancakes. How many, right off the top of your head, do you know how many you have in there?
Well, not exactly, but I would guess 20 plus.
Wow. Yeah.
There's so many interesting ones. But, you know, it's of course, they're all a pancake, you know, so there's a similarity. But it's remarkable how much difference there is with a basic ingredient of, you know, of flour with milk or water and eggs and what you can do from there.
Yeah.
Whether it's Swedish pancakes that are thin and, you know, very skinny and very small to big, thick sourdough flapjacks to pancakes that can be flavored with things like, pumpkin that we have, and other spices. Oh, there's so many different chances that you can have a good pancake breakfast.
You know, I suspect that there is a fair number of folks who have only made pancakes from a mix. And it doesn't take all that long to make your own mix up.
No, not at all.
That's always surprised me that's been so popular. Sure, you know, things like that come out of a box can be handy, but it's not that much harder to just mix together, you know, flour, sugar, and salt, because you have to add the liquid to it anyway and still stir it all up, and you can have just a much more flavorful combination when you do that yourself. And add your own fruit to it as a topping or a sauce or whatever. Oh, gosh, they're a great American treat.
Same thing with biscuits, which are equally popular in some areas of the country, at least. They were one of the original fast foods. That's how they became so popular, because they were easy and quick to do at breakfast. But now very few people make them themselves.
It's funny that we just seem to, as a country, leap on anything that appears to cut, you know, 3 seconds from our workload. And while I don't mean to make fun of the fact that we're all busy, and everybody is today, but, you know, there's a balancing act, we think, here. And to have something really good to put on your table, to take just a couple more minutes and do it rather than, you know, go through a drive-through, you know, breakfast fast food joint or just sit there with a box of donuts from a place like that, too, is just crazy. You can do so many breakfast foods so simply and so easily and have something really good and wholesome for your family and create some great breakfast memories for them as they're growing up. I mean, who's going to remember years from now that they had a breakfast bar on the way to school, you know? It's not going to be the kind of memories that I think we have of parents and grandparents making food for us on a weekend morning and sitting down and eating with us together.
Yeah. Now, you suggest in some recipes that there are steps that you can take the night before or a couple days before and, you know, just have it ready to go. And I'm wondering, like, something like for biscuit mix or for pancake mix, can you get those dry ingredients mixed together? Can you put them in the fridge and leave them there until you're ready to use them?
Oh, you sure can. And those are great examples of that. We frequently do something like that where we'll put the dry ingredients together and actually just leave them out on the counter, just the dry things. And then in the refrigerator, mix together the wet ingredients, which would usually be, you know, milk or eggs or maybe, you know, a little bit of something else too, maybe some vanilla or, you know, other butter perhaps. And those can go together. And then in the morning, all you do have to do is pour them together and pour them out onto your griddle, and you're ready to go. There are also a few things that, for example, buckwheat pancakes,
mm-hmm.
which are a nice winter dish. And we hear that it's really nasty weather in your listening area today. So these would be real good for a wintry kind of morning. And
or supper.
Yeah, true. Yeah, but they're something that you need to make ahead by like a night or a few hours because the dough, it's a yeasted dough, and it sours a little bit, too. It's kind of a sourdough yeast mixture. And with that, it's easy to make ahead because you really need to do that. So you can have that all assembled at night, let it sit in the refrigerator overnight, do its own thing, and in the morning you've got this wonderful tangy batter that's ready to go on the griddle naturally.
Mm. You know, that makes me think about maybe for a shortcut for French toast, what if I cracked a couple eggs, put them in a shake-up kind of container, put a little milk in there or whatever, the vanilla, and put that in the refrigerator. Then in the morning, I just shake that up and then put the bread in there, and bang, I'm ready to go.
You've got the idea.
Yeah.
That sounds great.
Okay.
In fact, in the book, we also have a baked French toast that can be made simply ahead by layering custard with the bread and then letting it sit overnight that way, and then it goes into the oven, and it's terrific then.
Or it can even be baked the night before.
Right, and then you can just reheat it the next morning. So it gives you lots of flexibility and lots of good taste, too.
There are also a number of great ideas in the book for what to put on top. And so maybe even if, in terms of pancakes and French toast and that kind of thing, so maybe if you were doing something like French toast and you were, you know, well, at this point in my life, French toast on any morning would be a real wonderful treat. But I think now I've got it down that I could do this pretty simply and pretty easily. But then to make it extra special, there are some things that you've got in the book that just sound really good. Rum raisin syrup, blueberry fruit sauce, maple butter, and all that stuff can be ready to go, too.
Oh, yes.
That's right. We even have a version of French toast that's savory, where you can add chunky tomato relish over the top of it. And that one makes a great supper idea, too. It has a stuffing of cheese and ham, or it could be turkey or any other kind of leftover meat. And, it's a real nice change from the usual sweet idea of French toast.
Yeah.
Breakfast foods are comforting any time of the day. They are some of our most serious comfort foods, and they certainly make a nice lunch or supper as well as a breakfast.
Yeah. Going back to the idea of syrups and whatnot, toppers for
mm-hmm.
French toast and pancakes, I found a lot of things, actually, in this book that were so new to me and so much fun to read. One of these things was watermelon syrup.
Uh-huh.
And corn cob syrup. Now, Cheryl, tell us about this syrup or jelly one of your great-grandmothers made right here in Illinois.
Oh, these are some great old American ideas. You know, now we have maple syrup all over the country, and we just pop it out of a bottle without thinking much about it. But traditionally, you know, maple trees only grow in certain northern areas of the country, and that kind of syrup wasn't available just broadly all over the place. So people developed other ideas that that they could make. And yeah, the corn cob syrup that you're referring to is something that was an old-time family specialty in my family and others in the Midwest. And you may know, but your listeners probably don't, that I grew up in Illinois, in the Galesburg area in particular. And, you know, in the Midwest, those kinds of people were very creative with their ingredients and came up with different things to do. And the corn cob syrup has a very, very mild, flavor of corn, which is, a sweet taste
mm-hmm.
itself, and then sugar. And it's really quite an interesting taste. It's very, you know, subtle, but very good. And if you use corn cobs that have a little bit of a reddish tint to them, the color of the jelly or syrup is just beautiful. It takes on this kind of pink tinge that's lovely.
Yeah.
Same with the watermelon syrup. It's it becomes a much darker shade, but it was something, you know, people in the Midwest had loads of watermelons, and, you know, in season. What do you do with all of those sometimes? So this was a way of keeping the watermelon pulp, cooking it down into a syrup, something that you could, you know, pour over not only pancakes, but, oh, people use it over coffee cakes in parts of the Midwest and like the northern prairie states, too.
Well, that sounds good. And it's another example of, you know, it some time ago we used everything but the squeak, and here is a case, I suppose, that you're using corn cobs and excess watermelon where you're getting the best out of the squeak as well.
No, anything fresh that couldn't be kept was preserved in some way for the winter.
Yeah. Let's talk with a listener who's waiting to talk with us in Urbana on line one. Good afternoon.
Hi. Nice show. I have a question. It seems like I always, when I'm making pancakes, I always either burn or don't quite get the first couple done. What's the tip for making certain that my cast iron is just hot enough to cook the perfect pancake? I'll get off. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks for the call this afternoon. Tips for making pancakes.
Well, the first thing that your reader mentioned is a very good thing for everybody to know. He talked about using cast iron, and to make really good pancakes, it is important to have a good heavy base. And cast iron is an excellent surface, and as long as it's well seasoned, you know, you're in good shape on that, whether it's a skillet or a cast iron griddle. So he's right about that. When you're cooking with the oil on the griddle or in the skillet, you want a very thin film of oil, and you want, for a pretest, to be able to flick just a few drops of water over the hot cooking surface, and you want them, you know, to sizzle and then evaporate quickly, but it should actually, you know, hit the griddle and dance a little bit as it evaporates. You know, I mean, if it's just gone before it even gets to the surface, it's a little too hot in that kind of case. And I think, you know, try, you know, work with your griddle a little bit and adjust that a bit as you need to. But I think that's one of the best tips that you can have.
Okay, very good. Other telephone calls are welcome this afternoon. Our guests, Cheryl Alters and Jameson and Bill Jameson, their latest book, A Real American Breakfast, the best meal of the day, any time of the day. This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. The numbers to call if you'd like to talk with us this afternoon, questions and comments are invited. In Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. Well, we mentioned the weather here today. For an early spring day, it is unpleasant. Let me say that. It's 25 degrees in Urbana. There's all kinds of weather advisories posted for the Illinois-Indiana area. We've had sleet, snow, and freezing rain overnight, and it looks like we're going to have some more before it's all finished. So today would be a great day, I think, to have breakfast for dinner. Suggestions. We mentioned a French toast with actually a savory kind of a sauce. What else do you got up your sleeve for a winter breakfast for dinner?
Bill, go ahead. You started to say, what are your favorites?
Well, there are a lot of possibilities. I like any kind of egg dish in the evening, and certainly hashes. We have a whole chapter on hashes are wonderful at supper. One of my favorites, either in the morning or the evening, is a hash brown pie, which is made with hash browns used as a pie crust and a mixture of eggs and cream and cheese is poured into the center and baked. Oh, and you cut it like a pie.
That sounds good.
Oh, it is.
That sounds good.
It has a great combination of a crispy, you know, crunchy hash brown crust and then that creamy, creamy filling. Oh, it is delicious.
Yeah.
I'm a fan of egg sandwiches for dinner.
Mm.
Something as simple as a fried egg between two slabs of good sourdough toast is great, but we like to elaborate on it a little bit depending on what's in the pantry. Maybe some long sautéed, you know, onions with a little tarragon added, or you know, just whatever happens to be on hand. You could even top that with a little bit of salsa if you wanted. Another thing we like is a scrambled egg type sandwich that we learned from the mother of an Italian American friend that uses a scramble with the long Italian frying peppers,
mm-hmm.
and that with a little olive oil on bread is just so super too.
That sounds great. When I was a kid, I remember my mom making corned beef hash, which was leftover corned beef and potatoes. And then got your choice. She'd either make you a fried egg to go on top of it, or she'd put a slice of whatever kind of cheese you wanted, and she'd run it under the broiler for you. And then have that with toast. That was a great supper.
Oh, I bet it was.
Yeah. And it was so great because she was like one of the few times she sort of gave you choices at dinner time, you know. Pretty much it was like, that's it, kids. So
that's nice. My mother was a big fan of the dish called Eggs Goldenrod.
Yeah.
And that's something that, you know, she learned from her mother, my grandmother. And it's a dish where you grate the egg yolk over the top of a little sauce made with the with hard-boiled egg whites, and maybe serve it over toast or something. And it's a real soothing comfort kind of dish. And it gets its name from the fact that grating of the egg yolk, the hard-boiled egg yolk over the top, really resembles something like, you know, goldenrod flowers.
Yeah, the pollen. Let's talk with another listener on line one in Urbana. Hello.
Hello. I have a question about how to make an oven pancake, something I learned many years ago. It's about a half a cup of flour, half a cup of milk, and an egg, and you put it in a skillet in the oven, and it sort of cooks up like a big bowl of flour. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Uh-huh. We call it a Dutch baby ourselves, but people okay. call it, you know, different kinds of names in different areas, sometimes a German pancake, but uh-huh. We always thought the Dutch baby name was fun.
Well, this is my question, because I learned how to make it so long ago, but when I returned to it, it wouldn't fly. It wouldn't bowl up. It would cook fine and it would taste good, but it wouldn't have that dramatic scoop to it. And I don't know what I'm doing wrong. How do you make those?
You are using the several eggs with it.
Maybe I used one egg, half a cup of flour, and half a cup of milk.
That doesn't really sound like enough egg proportionately to the flour.
Okay.
I mean, you may get that to work, but typically, for example, in our recipe, we start with 3/4 of a cup of flour, and
uh-huh.
we use 4 eggs, you know, to that mixture, and whisk all that together with, you know, some milk and a little bit of salt and sugar and butter, melted butter and such. And I think that, you know, part of that mixture of the eggs is what's helping it poof in that kind of way. And so if you're going to be using just one egg and a half a cup of flour, maybe, I mean, you might be able to make that work in a small skillet, but we use, in this case, something like an 8 to 9 or 10 inch skillet, and we get a real good result that way. And also, you do want the oven to be a really hot temperature. We use a 450-degree oven because, again, it's that hot air that allows it to expand and cook very quickly and get all that nice, poofy, floofy mixture.
Okay, so more eggs and my oven's the right temp. So thank you.
Okay, good luck with it. It's a great idea for
yeah.
breakfast.
Okay, thanks
very
for
tasty.
The call this afternoon. There's a chain of restaurants that does another kind of oven-baked pancake that's really delicious, and it's really sweet, and it's got loads of apples in it. Any advice on how we might try and replicate that at home?
Well, I'm not sure exactly of the kind that you're talking about, but I have stumbled, both of us, Bill and I, have stumbled across a version that might be like what you're talking about that, you know, is popular in the Midwest. And it's sometimes called a German apple pancake.
That's it.
Okay, in that case, what you want to do is to take butter, melt it in a skillet, you know, a couple of tablespoons of butter, then add thin sliced apples, maybe like 2 apples in the same kind of, you know, 10-inch skillet that we're sort of talking about hypothetically,
mm-hmm.
and saute them until they're tender, which would be about 10 minutes, and then put in some brown sugar, or you can, you know, use white sugar too, but we like the flavor of the brown, maybe about 2 tablespoons. And just mix that it in until it is melted. Then you can put your pancake batter, the Dutch baby or the German pancake batter, depending on what you call it, over the top and put it in the oven, and you'll get that poof and the apple at the bottom of it in that case. Some people even turn it over to get the apple on the top. You know, people do different things with it, but I think that's what you're remembering.
Yeah, yeah, and it's really sweet, and if you order one, it's like it's impossible to eat it by yourself. Although, for me anyway, although I have seen people do it. But it's really good, and it's a nice, I suppose if you made that and if you had company for breakfast, you could pull that out at the end of breakfast and have that, you know, in place of a coffee cake or a muffin or something with a hot cup of coffee at the end.
You sure could. It's kind of a showstopper, and we think it's one of those great dishes that you get more return on taste relative to effort, you know, something. So it always looks really elaborate and like it must have been magic to make, and it's really not all that tough.
Yeah. How did the two of you, there's so many recipes in this book, how did the two of you decide what you had to have in here? And, you know, because it seems to me that there's so many showstoppers in here and there aren't a lot that require a lot of, you know, a lot of effort.
No, it's always a struggle for us to narrow down the recipes that we want to include because we always start off with many more than we can put in a book. And we just talk about it together and try many things and some things that sound good don't work as well for us anyway, and so we discard those possibilities and focus on the ones that that do work well. We Cheryl develops all of our recipes, but many of them are based on traditional dishes, so they have precedence and they're accepted ingredients in them. But we do develop our own way of making them.
And do you spend a lot of time on the road when you're developing, at some point, when you're in the process of developing a cookbook?
Oh, yes. We've been all across the country researching our books for American Home Cooking and A Real American Breakfast in particular. We have really been into every corner of the country. And we spend some time in libraries, too, looking at old cookbooks from the 19th and early 20th centuries, seeing what people ate then.
One of the things that was interesting to do for this breakfast book, for A Real American Breakfast, is that we spent time in the New York Public Library that has a collection of menus that date back well into the sort of mid-19th century era, and pulling those out and seeing what was being served in, you know, hotels, in restaurants, on board trains, on board cruise ships, all kinds of things that were in this collection, you know, during these years that, you know, were just really fascinating. And boy, you compare those with what people eat today out of a box, if they eat anything at all. And those are really sort of the golden days of American breakfast, we think. We're trying to get things to return to that stage in some ways. We don't need that quantity of food anymore, certainly, but the variety of things that people used on their breakfast tables would just startle most people today.
Yeah, you include some of these things in the book, which is really interesting. They're literally sidebars on the pages next to the recipes, and they might include, those sidebars might be like tips on how to properly fry an egg or make sure your pancake's going to turn out nice. But then there are these little tidbits of information about from food writers of yesteryear or menus from all across the country, hotels and golf clubs, you name it.
That's right. That was a lot of the fun.
Yeah.
So can you tell us, were there things that you saw over the years? Let's say, for example, in terms of did breakfast change, let's say, from the early days of the Republic into, you know, the 19th century and into the early 20th century before, you know, Mr. Kellogg came along. Was breakfast pretty much the same for the first, you know, 150 years?
It was, except that in the colonial era, there was greater scarcity. So people generally didn't eat as many different things as they ate meals of the day. What we call dinner today, the evening meal, was the lesser meal of the day. People went to bed when it got dark, and they got up very early, and they got up hungry.
Yeah. Well, I know in traveling in Michigan's Upper Peninsula, I met folks who had four meals a day. They had breakfast twice a day. They had breakfast in
right.
the morning, and they had breakfast before they went to bed.
Well, that's an old European tradition.
Uh-huh. And then there was dinner was lunch, and let's see. No, wait a minute. The noonday meal, which we call lunch, is called dinner, and the evening meal is called supper.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's still, you know, just a few years ago, that was how things worked.
Right.
Up there in Escanaba.
Yeah, that's unusual, but certainly understandable.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there are some, you know, some good reasons why Americans have gotten away from eating the variety and the size of the breakfast that were common during the 19th and very early parts of the 20th century. And you know, some of those are quite valid, things like, you know, women going into the workforce and, you know, having less time to prepare, you know, food in the morning. There's some funny things you might not think about, like the fact that once television came along in the mid-20th century, people started staying up later, so then they slept later in the morning, and so they had less time.
I think Johnny Carson is as responsible as anyone in the country for the demise of the American breakfast.
Oh.
Well, when did cereal really take off? I mean, it was a health food,
right? The kind of box cereal that we know as cereal today. People have eaten cereal in other forms back to Roman times, not usually as a breakfast food, but oatmeal was very popular in the 19th century here. Not out of the little Quaker can or box, but real oatmeal bought in bulk. Box cereals came around, starting in about the 1870s, 1880s, and they were touted as a health food. But very early on, they started loading them with sugar and other ingredients to help increase the sales that did nothing for the healthiness of the product.
Do you guys
and
ever
look what we eat today? Look at any American supermarket and see all those shelves filled with things that really we ought to be embarrassed to feed to our children.
It's in the market that I go to, it's an entire aisle.
Right.
Plus it spills over because on the back side are the cereal bars, the fruit bars,
yeah.
the quick cereal snack mixes, you know, like it's a sweetened version of, you know, party mix.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
Yeah. And all that is packaged so conveniently, so it's an aisle and then some.
Yeah, it is attractive. I mean, it certainly draws people's attention.
Yeah. When it comes to oatmeal, are you guys fans of steel cut oats or do you do the? I'm sure you don't do instant, but. What kind of oatmeal do you guys like to prepare?
Well, we do like the steel-cut oats, the ones that are really the nubbly nuggets of a pure oat grain, when there's time, and that's a great weekend thing for us, or when we think about it a night ahead, we can put water with those kind of oats and let it, you know, sit overnight and soak and then just cook it up pretty quickly in the morning. We, you know, think that the rolled oats, the ones that are usually labeled
old-fashioned,
you know, in the supermarkets can certainly be, you know, decently edible, too. But I just don't understand.
Good. I mean,
yeah. And they don't take that long. You can cook that pretty darn quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can add pecans or, a little bit of brown sugar or a touch of maple syrup. But, you know, I think we're way too conditioned to add just volumes of sugar that are not necessary. But, you know, you can add some dried fruit. You can dress it up in all kinds of ways. So
sliced
we think
almonds.
That's certainly fine, too. Mm-hmm. Although, if you haven't had the steel cut ones, you know, give yourself a treat and give it a try.
Yes, definitely
sometime.
Try it.
Yeah, those are good. But they do, you've got to plan ahead a little bit.
That's right.
Right.
Uh-huh. They take longer to cook, but they have this great texture that I think is real surprising to people because they haven't been rolled into the flakes like we see the more typical oatmeals of supermarkets today.
Yeah. A little more toothsome.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Cheryl and Bill Jamieson are our guests here this afternoon on the Afternoon Magazine. We're talking with them about their latest book, A Real American Breakfast, the best meal of the day, any time of the day. Listeners, you're invited to call us with your questions and comments in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, 800-222-9455. We talked a little bit about showstoppers, and I've got to say that the jacket for the book is a showstopper, and it is something very simple, but it's beautiful.
Isn't that a lovely photograph?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's something that our publisher in-house is responsible for with their design team, and it is so lovely. And for people who haven't seen it, it's a soft-boiled egg in an egg cup with a wonderful piece of lacquered bacon coming out of the top of it with some really good homemade toast, just simple white bread, but homemade toast on the side, and it's the most elegant-looking, simple meal. they've really done a beautiful job on the production of the book. And if you haven't looked at the spine of it, see that giant stack of little tiny silver dollar pancakes going miles high.
Yeah. Well, now, how do you make lacquered bacon? Because this is something, too, that on a Sunday would be easy to do, but boy, what a beautiful thing that is.
This is Bill's dish. I'm going to let him tell you about
okay,
it.
Okay, Bill.
Well, you can lacquer bacon many different ways. All you're doing really is putting a glaze on it, and mustard is always good in it, we think. A little sweetness, perhaps, but even that's not necessary. Sometimes we use a chili jam or jelly in ours.
Mm-hmm. Red pepper jelly would be good.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Boy.
And you just bake it with the base on it. It comes out something like barbecued ribs that have been basted with a barbecue sauce right before they come off the pit.
What a great idea.
Yeah, you get crispy edges and chewy edges and this great flavor of the smoke and the pork. It's just one of my favorites.
And that's a real easy way to cook bacon, too, is in the oven.
Oh, yes.
It's a lot less mess, if you ask me.
It is. It's amazing that people don't do that more often,
yeah,
too.
Let's talk with another listener, In Muhammad on line one. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi.
I may have not heard it, but I'd like to refer back to the oatmeal. I've been real busy with these instant ones, the little packets. Bing, a senior citizen and not very active, I found them to be very nourishing for me. Now, what do the folks think of those?
Well, I think that any kind of grain like that is really, good for us. I think Americans generally don't get enough grains in their diets. What I prefer, and Bill, you can say what you think about this too, but rather than use the instant packages, which I think have so little texture, what we do when we're really in a rush is use those old-fashioned oats that you can, just keep in the canister for weeks and weeks too. But, just to put those in a bowl with a little bit of water in the morning and then zap it for about 2 minutes in the microwave. And to me, it's basically as quick as the instant variety, but you've got better texture to it than I find that the instant has myself. And a lot of the instant ones are flavored varieties, and I think a lot of times the flavor to me is sort of artificial tasting. So I'd rather just put in my own dried fruit or, a little sprinkle of brown sugar or something myself. But I agree that, when you live by yourself and you're looking for something wholesome, oatmeal certainly is a good choice.
All right, thank you very kindly.
Thank you for the call this afternoon. 333-9455, the number in Champaign-Urbana. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455. Are there cereals, hot cereals, that you can do ahead? Let's say make a little bit more, and then the next day you can just warm it up over in a double boiler or in the microwave? I'm thinking about rice or cream of wheat or oatmeal.
Can do that with certain kinds of those things, and if it makes it easier for you to go ahead and do it earlier, that's okay with us.
Well, there are a lot of things that that can be made in bigger portions and kept to eat a few times during the week. So I, on a Sunday evening, when things are quiet, it's nice to make up a breakfast dish that you'll eat the rest of the week, like my hash brown pie.
That's right. Oh, you know, we have a wild rice porridge, a wild rice cereal that is really good. You know, you can make a big batch of wild rice on a Sunday, as Bill's talking about, and use that during the week. Or sometimes we mix wild rice and oatmeal together,
uh-huh.
and that's really good. And the texture of it doesn't seem to be at all affected by, you know, reheating another day, too. So, you know, sometimes we have to think out of the box a little bit, literally, when it comes to breakfast in this country.
Let's talk with another listener in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hi. Oh, I'm enjoying breakfast with you today. And I had just a couple of questions and comments. When I get really tired of raisins in oatmeal, and I am a great oatmeal lover, I have discovered the orange-flavored dried cranberries. They're called craisins. And they are fabulous in oatmeal, very gourmet. My mother and father-in-law, who lived in Urbana and were of Dutch descent, had a favorite meat that they made themselves, sliced it, and then browned it in a skillet. And it's called Balkenbrie. And I think it has a liver and pork base with some cereal in
it.
And so I always think of them. It's smelly. The whole house smells like Balkenbrie when that's done. What my mother used to do, oh, this would have been in the 30s, was that when she had made anything involving cornmeal, such as cornbread, she would keep some of it in sort of a moist condition, keep it in one of those long glass refrigerator dishes in the refrigerator. Well, at that time, we didn't have a refrigerator, kept it in the ice box, and sliced it, and there's nothing better than fried cornmeal mush.
Oh,
you
I
bet.
Love
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I used to just.
Both of us do.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, I just remember my great grandmother making that, and then, you know, my mom, you know, successively through the generations. But, oh, that is so good with a little crisp surface on the, you know, and then a creamy center to it.
Exactly.
Thanks for mentioning that.
Yeah.
That's a great breakfast memory.
Thank you so much for your program today, and I'll continue to enjoy it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks
Bye-bye.
For the call this afternoon. We're almost here at the time when we've got to say so long for now. But before we go, I want to ask you about something that's become very popular lately around here. You can go out and you can get yourself a fruit smoothie, and it's you know, it's not that hard to make at home as well. What are your favorites in the way of smoothies?
I love mango with banana, and smoothies are great to make at home. They're a wonderful sort of mixture of protein as well as a little bit of sweet naturally and dairy sometimes. And, you know, I like them with yogurt, but I think papaya is probably my single favorite fruit to have, or mango with papaya as a second are my favorite fruits to put in a smoothie. Strawberries are really good, too, though.
Yeah. Well, she sometimes puts chocolate in, too.
But not with those. I make that separate.
Well,
actually, I use the banana with the chocolate. That's
a little
true.
Chocolate. A little chocolate syrup, maybe?
No, I like to use sort of, you know, chocolate to come up with a Mexican chocolate flavor. When you get off the air, Celeste, look up the Icy Mexican Chocolate Smoothie, and it has chocolate with almonds and cinnamon and some yogurt and banana. Oh, is that one good?
Oh, that does sound good. Okay, maybe we can put that up on the website.
Hey, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Okay, so folks can find it there.
Good. Well, we hope that our talking today will help them add variety and flavor and a real sense of fun back into a real American breakfast.
I bet there are quite a few of us this afternoon who are thinking tonight when we get home, it's breakfast for dinner. I want to thank the two of you very much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you, Celeste. It's always a pleasure.
Bill Jamison and Cheryl Alters Jamison are guests this afternoon. They're the authors of the award-winning American Home Cooking and Smoke and Spice. Their latest book is A Real American Breakfast, the best meal of the day, anytime. of the day. The publisher, William Morrow, it's an imprint of HarperCollins.